Holy cow! Hey there, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans. Welcome to another episode of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight, we are talking about Season 4, Episode 6, The Good Samaritan. We've got a very special guest joining us tonight. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Oh my god, you guys! Oh my god!
Did you all just see what I just saw?
What'd you see?
I saw an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And it was awesome!
There were Ghost Riders!
There were multiple
Ghost Riders! We're talking Ghost Riders on Ghost Riders!
Alright, guys. We're not going to waste any time. Let's just go ahead and get right to it. Let me introduce my panel. I'm your host, Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter at TheManguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. We are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag ABTVMarvel tonight. Let me introduce the rest of my fantastic panel. To my left, returning champion, Matt Lieberman.
Hello, hello. Woo! Oh, it's good to be home. It's good to be back with you guys. I'm so glad that I can be here.
It's so good to have you in studio, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's
been
a blast.
Like a full season since we've
I
been
know
here,
it's so. Been a very long well I was here for like the finale last year I think?
season two finale when
Whoa.
We all cosplayed.
Oh boy, that was a long time ago.
But you are being gracious enough to join us while Agent Jesse is off on assignment. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for joining
He's
us
off saving the world,
off doing stuff and things and stuff. To his left, hey. Zach Wilson.
Hey guys, Zach Wilson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson, but that's not important. What's important is the guest that we have joining us today in studio, Felipe Smith.
Hey, what's going on?
Yay!
Can I get my Twitter information too?
Yes!
I'm Felipe Smith. You can find me at Felipe Tweeters, F-E-L-I-P-E-T-W-E-E-R-S. And then on Instagram, Felipe Smith Art. Same thing for Tumblr.
So, sweet. I don't know if you guys can tell from that angle over there or at any of the angles from the ways the camera is looking, but Felipe's name happens to be all over those comic books that are adorning our desk at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Felipe, so, because we didn't say it out loud.
Yeah, maybe you should, like, tee him up, because he's a big deal.
Yeah, Felipe not only has written all new Ghost Rider, but created the character that we've been enjoying all season, Robbie Reyes.
And Gabe.
Yeah.
Also created Gabe.
And
Eli Morrow. And,
all of these and, came from Felipe.
Yeah.
So we're honored to have you joining us so we can talk about tonight. Because we got the origin of Robbie Reyes.
And it's a little bit different than what we're familiar with. So we want to hear your guys' thoughts as well. What did you guys think of the changes? And let's not waste any time before we get into any of the Aes Sedain stuff, before we get into Lucy and Eli and Joe and their all differing quests for power. Let's just talk about the thing that's on our mind, and that's the fact that Johnny Blaze was in this episode.
Ooh,
guys.
Hot fire!
That's so cool! Yeah, oh, man, it's so cool.
You didn't need to do it, but you did! Didn't you?
To be fair, we don't know. Well, no, we do. We saw, I was going to say,
come on,
like,
don't take this away from me.
I was
going
to say, like,
it
could have been Danny Ketch. Like, the leather jacket doesn't, it's like, I mean, he doesn't have spiked studs on his jacket.
That's
but,
true.
But he also wasn't wearing a stuntman jumpsuit.
Yeah.
So, that's true. So.
But, the basement from last week that the Darkhold was in, since we're assuming that this is all connected.
I did not notice that.
Mm-hmm. There was not only the Quentin Carnival poster and the leather jacket, but there's also a stuntman's helmet on one of the shelves.
So, nice.
So they're, like, being very clear about who's in
yeah,
whose house that is.
Yeah, basically, long story short, Johnny Blaze had the Darkhold in his basement. They steal the Darkhold, and presumably he's in Los Angeles at this point to try to find it, comes across Robbie Reyes instead. Very interesting turn of events.
So here's the question, though. Is this, like, just something for eagle-eyed fans to be like, okay, this tracks, there's, like, this sub-story, or are we going to, at some point, see a true Johnny Blaze involvement?
I hope so.
I mean,
fight!
It happened
fight.
In the comics.
It's
a nice story arc.
Yeah, and it was wonderful.
I feel like there's no way that you can't at this point. Like, you can't show that and then just like not go there. And Shield's very good at, like, they're not going to show you something that they're just going to ignore.
But it's
except maybe Graviton.
No, but
still waiting for him in the basement.
he never came back. It's going to be like the very last episode. He's just going to bust.
I bet just in the writers' room on the whiteboard, they just have circled up in the corner Graviton ? Do we ever?
Maybe. But
the, it's too powerful of a villain to bring back.
But the thing is that I figured that one of the reasons why they brought in Robbie Reyes in the first place was not only because of the fact that he's a compelling character and because he's beloved by so many different Marvel fans, but also because I kind of figured that a lot of Johnny Blaze stuff was tied up in licensing and all that other kind of weird ethereal like stuff when it comes to Marvel licensing of its characters. I kind of figured that they were like, okay, you know what? We can't use Johnny Blaze. Let's go with Robbie. Everybody loves Robbie. But here, knowing that they had the rights to use Johnny Blaze in the first place, and they went with Robbie Reyes anyway, I'm like, yes! Good job, Marvel! That was a great decision.
And that's anybody could have been more excited about that than me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, nobody could be more excited about that than you, man.
So, yeah, let's talk about this a little bit. When Marvel first approached you about working on Ghost Rider, how did they approach you about it? How did they pitch it to you?
Well, I got an email from my editor, Mark Panini, who I met 10 years prior to that with my first in working for a different publisher doing my first graphic novel series. At the time, I already had a job working at Nickelodeon designing characters for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I had just been promoted to character designer. I was working in the storyboard department as a revisionist, and then I get an email from Marvel as I get this new job that I was pumped about, and he's like, hey, like, we got something for you might like. And then they said, hey, like, it's Ghost Rider. And so I'm on the phone outside talking to him, and I'm thinking, oh, Ghost Rider. And I'm like, a lot of stuff has been done with the character, and it's, you know, it's been a couple decades. And they had the movies coming out with Nicolas Cage. And so just truthfully, I was like, well, what could I do with Ghost Rider that's different, that, like, people would be really into? And then he said, well, we got two stipulations. And I was like, okay. And he said, he's got to be younger, and he's got to drive a car, and it's a new character. And the minute I heard the car, I was like, okay, like, that sold me, because number one, I knew we were going to get attention. And primarily, I thought it would be negative because it's not a motorcycle, so how the hell is that Ghost Rider? So at least I think our first issue would get people hopefully picking it up just to tear it apart and be like, this is garbage, this is my Ghost Rider. So, and the fact that it was a different character, so we weren't really revamping or changing or getting rid of, you know, Johnny Blaze or Danny Ketch or Alejandra Blaze or Jones, depending, or Carter Slade. It was just an entirely new guy. And so after that, you know, once the only two stipulations were younger in the car, and he's like, do whatever you want. Like, I just moved him to L.A. I kind of changed a couple of different things. And part of the storyline was that he's not really a spirit of vengeance. He's not technically not a Ghost Rider. So that's why he looks different. He doesn't have a human skull. Like, he has things that are similar to the traditional Ghost Riders in terms of flames and the vehicle and flames and everything. But at the same time, a very noticeable thing at first is that he looks like, some people think he was wearing a mask. He's got like this metallic thing with like a hole with the fire coming out. And the whole idea was that he's not a spirit of vengeance, and so his transformation is somewhat different from a traditional Ghost Rider. He's the fusion of a muscle car, which is the 69 Dodge Charger RT, a human body, which is Robbie, and then a satanic spirit, which is Eli Morrow in our comics. So his head is actually a metallic engine skull with a blower on the forehead and vents in the back. And that's why it looks that way, and it doesn't look like a human skull, because it does. It's not the same transformation as a spirit of vengeance, so he has to look different. Also, his powers aren't the same as a Ghost Rider. He doesn't have a pendant stare. There's a lot of things he does not have, but he does happen to use chains. There's certain things that, my idea was that if you're going to have some kind of satanic power aiding you in doing things, there's going to be some things, certain similarities, like the Hellfire, maybe a weapon of choice. But Robbie goes for, like, you know, car shop tools. So he uses ball peen hammers, wrenches, the chains, all things that you'd find in a garage. We took at first talking to editorial at Marvel, they're like, hey, how's this? This is not a Ghost Rider. Like, what's the title of the book? It's Ghost Rider. And I quickly said, well, there's also All New in there, and we got to make that count for something as well, you know? So
it's
so
completely then, different.
Yeah. Like, I put my case. It's all new. It's not even what you know. Well, my whole thing was, I figured, you know, there's people who've read every single issue of Ghost Rider. And when you're a fan of Ghost Rider, my first Ghost Rider was Danny Ketch in the 90s. And it was actually a series in which he was not a Spirit of Vengeance anymore. It was Ghost Rider and Johnny Blaze, Spirits of Vengeance. And Johnny Blaze had passed on the Spirit of Vengeance to Danny Ketch. And now he was just a human with, like, long hair and, like, shades and a trench coat and stubble, like, super 90s. Like, he looked like Lorenzo Lamas with, like, shades.
Perfect.
And then, you know, Danny Ketch was the Ghost Rider that actually popularized the character in the 90s with the spikes and the chain and that, like, modded out, like, modern-looking motorcycle with, like, the shovel head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the look they went with for the movies with Nicolas Cage, where it was, you know, the leather and the chains and the spikes. Originally, Johnny Blaze had a jumpsuit. He was a stuntman at a carnival. And I feel it was more based on, like, Evel Knievel. And, like, because it was the 70s, you know, you had, like, a counterculture, like, biker kind of, like, whole theme going on, like Easy Rider and all that kind of stuff. You know, it was, like, a cool character that kind of went against the norm and was, like, you know, your anti-hero. And, you know, a skull in flames is, like, super badass. It's, like, what you always imagine someone getting as a tattoo, you know. So this character was that. And then the whole stunt thing and, like, motorcycles, you know, had their own identity at the time. So, you know, now with this, it was just trying to, you know, do something that was relevant to us right now. And, of course, cars became very popular and, you know, a lot of car shows. And you had, like, the Fast and Furious franchise. And, like, it was something where, you know, a lot of the youth is really into, like, these things. And, of course, being on the West Coast, you know, low rider culture and, you know, just modding your cars and just street racing in general, like, I wanted to kind of involve all of that into the design and ultimately the character. You know, I figured, well, if we're in LA, and where are we going to do it? Are we going to make it Hollywood or, like, something like that? Or are we going to go more LA and the kind of LA that you don't normally see in movies or on TV shows? And I thought East LA is, like, super LA. When I first moved out here in 2001, you know, a city with palm trees. It was my first time in a city with palm trees and power lines and everything. And just, like, that image, just I thought was really striking. It's a very big part of LA's, like, identity visually and, like, just vibe-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you see the movies, it's, like, palm trees and beaches and, like, kind of something else. Or, like, Sunset Boulevard and, like, the Strip and that kind of stuff, nightclubs. I wanted to make it a little bit more kind of gritty and, like, everyday LA where you got, like, certain neighborhoods with, like, you know, rubbish lying around and, like, maybe a couch on the sidewalk and kind of the LA that people who live here know really well. And so the Tread Moore was our first artist in the first story arc, Engines of Vengeance. So the first five issues, he's a co-creator with me on Ghost Rider. When I did the initial sketches for Robbie and an all-new Ghost Rider Transformed, and then, you know, we picked the car. And I went with that Dodge Charger car. It's been in all sorts of movies and TV shows. One of my personal favorite TV shows as a kid was The Dukes of Hazzard, and the General Lee, which was an orange Dodge Charger, same year, 69, with the strip tail lights and the partition in the front. Those are just the differences. If you look at the cars, the 79, the 70, or the 69, the 70, and the 68, one of the main differences is the tail lights and the partition in the front. And the reason I liked the one with the partition was, well, first of all, cars have a face to them with the headlights.
Yeah.
But the Charger's headlights are hidden. So it's already a scarier car. It's like it's blocky and square and, like, strong looking. And it doesn't have a face. So it's already, you know, scary. And you make it all black. And then the particular thing about the 69 is the partition on the grill makes it kind of look like a skull. You know, you got a silver rim with the partition in the middle. It kind of looks like you're
looking into, you know, the empty, vacant eyes. Yeah.
And teeth coming at you.
It looks so good on the screen.
Oh man.
Yeah, like, totally. Yeah.
Well, so amazing.
So bringing it to screen, like, the big thing in this episode is we finally, like, we knew that there was something different about his origin story. coming in. How does that like line up? Like, obviously, this is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was going to do what they were going to do with the character, and they also had to deal with people who were not familiar with Robbie and like, but were familiar with Johnny Blaze's origin story. Yeah, how does it feel to see like all of those things change for Robbie's story?
Actually, I'm very happy with what I've been seeing so far, and I'll tell you why. Like, we've all seen different iterations of things that we like through animation, comics, TV, movies, and a lot of times they're not very faithful to the source material, or they take it in a direction that might not work too well for a lot of the fans. I was well aware that probably a lot of things might change, you know, for TV. And at Marvel, you know, publishing TV and movies are separate, and, you know, they have their own creative groups that do things. But the biggest thing, the more I started seeing things, like I'm wearing right now, I don't know if you can see it, I don't know where I should point this, but this is my first cover to issue one of All New Ghost Riders, my variant, and it features Robbie standing in front of the Hell Charger. And before season one, they had like their teaser promotional art, and it was this shot. It was Ghost Rider standing in front of the car. They just flipped the car the other way, but he was in the same stance, and, you know, and when I saw that, I'm like, hey, maybe like these guys kind of might be all right with the source material and want to actually use it for like stuff. And the more, you know, eventually I went to the premiere and I got to not only meet Gabriel Luna, who plays Robbie, and I think he plays him really, really well. I mean, his characterization, again, I'm going to be geeking out like crazy right now. Because again, like when you come up with something and like you're drawing it and whatever, and like you're thinking, all right, it needs to be like this and like that, you know, seeing somebody else take it and like treat it with care and really like stick to a lot of like the fundamentals of what like you'd hope for and like you came up with originally is something that makes me really happy. And like seeing, you know, Gabriel, his name's Gabriel, like his brother, so like on set they have problems because there's a Gabe, there's somebody, you know, Lorenzo's playing Gabe as a character, but his name is Gabe, but he's playing Robbie, so
the director yells Gabe and both people
yeah. Exactly. But the fact that when I first met Gabriel, he just told me, hey, like, I was excited to meet you. And, of course, like, you know, you draw comics for a living and sit somewhere and you're not on TV or doing anything like that. You know, somebody who's, like, portraying characters and, like, has, like, you know, a lot of exposure telling you that just seems kind of surreal and, like, weird, you know. But he was like, yeah, like, I'm happy to get to meet you finally. And, like, you know, we talked about the character a lot and about, like, the books and everything. And I was, like, thinking, you know, I'm nodding and I'm like, I'm thinking, man, this guy, like, read the comics. Like, he's, like, into it. You know, and a friend of mine at work told me, you know, it's different times. Now you have people in movies and TV and just doing all sorts of stuff that are more in tune with, like, popular culture. Comics and animation are becoming more popular culture, mm-hmm. more than they were, at least when I was growing up. And so now you have people playing these parts who are really into the actual medium, which is comics. And I feel like, you know, I told Gabriel, like, you know, you couldn't expect more, like, hope for more as a creator than to have somebody, you know, playing the part of a character you wrote and actually be invested in that way, you know. And a lot of, like, I look at photos of, like, him, you know, in different scenes and, you know, just his posture and, like, his demeanor and, like, just the way he turns his head. It's, like, looks like a lot of the drawings that I did, you know, just to promote the series, because at the time I was writing it, I didn't get to draw. I did get to draw issues 11 and 12 of the second story arc, which I was, like, super pumped about. But, yeah, seeing, like, an actor really care about that and, like, commit to, like, getting it as close as possible. And then I met Mark Kopak, who's the head of supervisor of visual effects for the show. And, like, you know, Ghost Rider in the show has a bone skull, which ours has, like, a metallic, mm-hmm. like, skull. But the closer I looked at it, you know, it had cracks that mimicked the actual lines on the line, like, patterns and the blower on the all-new Ghost Rider skull. And they'd stylized the jawline and the eyes and, like, they emoted by, like, you know, moving. And so they were doing a lot of things while still staying closer to the version of Ghost Rider that most people know, which is, you know, a human skull with, like, you know, the leather jacket and the pants, you know, which our guy in the comics has, like, a full, like, leather jumpsuit.
Right.
Which yeah. most people aren't used to that. And it had to be different for the comic. But in the show, they still...
I remember we noticed, like, when the first, like, the reveal, like, the cracks, like, was a perfect, like, way to pay homage to the drawing. And now, like, seeing, like, how the accident played out, it also, just attention to detail that the show has done is... that's how why the cracks are there. They even justified the cracks because of the accident. Mm-hmm. Just like broke his skull, whereas Johnny Blaze or the Good Samaritan's skull was completely intact.
Also, looks very. That's the other thing that made me really happy is that they have different looking skulls.
Yes. And like it maybe
they're ever on screen together again, you're gonna be able to tell them apart.
Yeah, but it's like I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, or I'm looking for it. But I feel like tonight I noticed more than ever how close it looks to the original design. Like I feel like even the tone of the bone looked closer, like to like a slate gray, like closer to something metallic versus like a dry white. You know what I mean? Like, they're trying to very carefully toe that middle line.
Another very important thing, the actual, like, burning embers in the eye sockets that give, like, this Ghost Rider so much expression are also in the comic. Like, traditionally, again, Ghost Riders were, like, this scary, like, face of death skull.
Right,
with
vacant eyes.
With vacant eyes, yeah. And, you know, Robbie's version is a little different. They did that. And talking to Mark Kolpak, the VFX supervisor, he even like there's like a whole vent effect because he has vents in the comic where like it intensifies when he gets angry and like you'll see it shoot out of the crevices on the side of the skull. And like again, like when I met him at the premiere, we were talking about like how, you know, he would figure out like how the effects for the car and the skull. And he's like, how do I make this look right? And it's like it's got to be like this and like that. And again, like you couldn't ask for more from a creative crew. I mean, even Ann Foley for like just all the costume design for all the characters and everything, like they've all like really gotten into it and like done, I don't know, again, I'm geeking out because there's a difference between working with like professionally with a group of people who are very capable and they're just doing their job, and then people who are very capable but also like they're just really getting in there and fine tuning, and you know, because the devil's in the details.
Yeah, there's there's a passion there.
Yeah.
Well, like, because, like, let's talk about the devil.
Because,
like, Robbie keeps saying he made a deal with the devil, so he, like, cries out in midair to anyone who would help him, and then the Ghost Rider shows up.
Is that
and
a random coincidence?
I can't think it is at all.
No.
But so,
but
does,
like,
does
at the same time,
that,
it's, you know. Like,
Johnny Blaze just happened to be walking by.
So, like,
it's like, oh, what's
well,
going
he heard
on
his
over
cry
here?
And he was nearby looking for the Darkhold. To me, that's like coincidence and opportunity.
Again, the Darkhold being stolen gives him a reason to be in LA.
Right.
But,
right.
But is
but
that,
it could be
does that mean that,
else.
Like, is Zarathos? Zarathos?
Yeah, Zarathos.
How do you pronounce that?
Yeah.
Whatever. Spirit of Vengeance.
The Z-Man.
Did he or like maybe Mephisto or somebody hear like his like dying prayer? And if they're controlling Ghost Rider, like just send him to like collect his soul? Or to like activate him as like another Ghost Rider? Are there
this.
Ghost Riders all over the world? Like,
I would
working
love this
as,
if this
like,
was...
Are we talking about like a Buffy season 8 situation?
Yeah,
where we've got Slayer Central? And it's just Ghost Riders all over the entire planet? The Antarctic Ghost Rider
well,
just
like,
riding past penguins?
He puts his hand on Robbie's face and like it looked like a transference.
Yes.
Yeah, right. And here's the question. Yeah, is it like with the story in the 90s where he transferred the Spirit of Vengeance to Robbie,
right.
And now he's not the Ghost Rider
right.
anymore. Robbie's
that makes way
that
more
mantle.
Sense.
And
than
he doesn't have that curse, which like a lot of the previous Ghost Riders always felt that the Spirit of Vengeance was a curse. And a lot of the storylines, you know, Johnny Blaze or Danny Ketch, they fall to alcoholism and stuff because they're like, this spirit, I can't, you know, where, and transferring it is like, all right, well, you deal with this now. I'm out of here. I'm gonna, you know what? Forget the motorcycle. I'm gonna take the bus, and I'm done with this life. And like, you know, whoever has the new, you know, the spirit now,
not
has
my
to deal
problem
with it.
Anymore.
I you mean, know? That would be great because then we could see like Johnny come back later in the season to
right.
like he doesn't
wearing
have the power anymore, but he's
and
like
shaved.
Oh, and he's got a mullet now. He went full 90s all of a sudden. Like, he's like, I'm back, guys.
Full on throwback, and then just have everyone doing quips about how 90s he looks.
Well, you know what I hope, and again, this is I'm not involved at all with the TV show, and I'm you know I write the comics, which we have a new series coming out in November, new Ghost Rider series. We've dropped the all new, and it features Robbie Reyes and
yes.
Gabe Reyes, Spirit of Eli, and the beautiful Hell Charger. But one of the things I do, which I can't help but do is when I'm watching the show, I'm looking at the differences, right? Like Uncle Eli is alive, and he's a good guy in the beginning, and he took care of him.
Or so we thought. Right.
Dun, dun, dun.
But yeah.
Yeah, like, I see those things, and I'm like, all right. But my biggest thing when creating Robbie Reyes was he has to, in some ways, he's kind of the antithesis of what Ghost Rider is, because he's not a righteous spirit of vengeance that's on Earth as a weapon against injustice and, like, the wicked. But rather, he's the opposite. He's the spirit of a serial killer that, like, brings Robbie back to life to continue his killing, you know? So he's kind of like, you know, Chucky, and he can't find, you know, like Charles Lee Ray, the serial killer,
although
who can't
of
find
being,
the human.
Instead of being in a toy store when he dies, right. Having like, to be in his car, yeah.
Well, right. He was dying in his car. Like, that's the thing. In the comics, Eli is, like, double-crossed by the Russian mob that he was a hitman for. And so he gets shot, and he's running away in this car, and he's dying, and he's like, he has the knowledge to pass on his essence into another living body and you know, and live forever, but he's stuck in this car, and in a moment of desperation, he leaves it in the car. So he's stuck in this car's haunted, and then Robbie takes it in the comics, he races, dies, and then the spirit revives him. And because blood ties and Ghost Riders, mm-hmm. Eli is his uncle, we find out later. But the biggest thing for me is, when he meets Johnny Blaze in the comics, there's this big thing where Johnny Blaze is like, he's seen Robbie on TV in the news because there's a big showdown in like Hill Rock Heights, which is his fictional East LA neighborhood. And which I made it fictional because I didn't want anybody to feel like I was misrepresenting their neighborhood or their community.
Yeah, fair enough.
And a lot of bad things happen in Hill Rock Heights. So like, you know, but, you know, we get the shot of somebody at a biker bar watching the news. And there's like a glimpse of like someone's cell phone photo of like this Ghost Rider type thing in a car, and like this mysterious figure like puts down his beer without even drinking it, pays, and then leaves and heads from New York west on his motorcycle, and you're like, who could that be? And eventually when he meets up with Robbie, he's like, well, this is not a, you're not a spirit of vengeance, like, who the hell are you? And I think eventually he finds out that there's two human souls inside this body, and which normally it's the pairing of like a spirit and a human, you know, and
right,
a
human instead,
but,
two
but now you had two humans in there, and he's like, one of them is good, the other one is very evil.
Yeah, and not to mention Eli's in the driver's seat when that meeting happens.
Yeah, well, and so, it doesn't go well.
Yeah, so Eli in the show is like, he's like sort of obsessed with the dark. There's like a Gollum vibe to the dark.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the thing. Was Eli always a corrupt jerk, or like, is it the Darkhold just bringing out the worst in him, in the same way that it brought out the worst in Lucy and Joe?
I think that's what it is. I think Eli starts out as like a good guy that takes care of the various boys.
The comics have me inclined to believe that he's just a monster through and through.
Well, you know, here's another thing about the difference in the show, right? We see how Gabe ended up in the wheelchair.
Sure.
And in the comics, it's way darker.
Yeah.
Because it's Eli is still alive. Eli is Robbie's dad's brother. It's his half-brother. It's therefore Moro as a last name. But and I won't reveal too much more because I have to do that in the comics. But Eli had a problem with Robbie's mom. He didn't like her. He felt that she got in the way of his relationship with his brother. They had a relationship very much like Robbie and Gabe. And Robbie's dad behaved as Robbie does to Gabe. He was Eli's older brother, mm-hmm. who took care of him and spoiled him. Looked after him. And so when, you know, Robbie's mom came into the equation, then like Eli had a lot of problems with that. And she was pregnant. Robbie was a kid, and she was pregnant with Gabe. And then when Robbie's dad wasn't around, Eli pushes her down the stairs hoping to kill her. But she survives, but then Gabe is born with a certain condition. And that is Eli's fault, which he reveals in the comic. And Robbie is now stuck with the spirit inside of him of someone who he really hates, because he's seeing the person responsible for, you know, for Gabe's condition, and with him constantly.
Right.
Now, in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Robbie has another cross to bear, which is that Gabe's condition is his fault because he took him on this race, and he's like, watch me win this race.
Or at least he interprets it as his fault.
Right. Yeah. We know
like,
what happened.
He's like, come along, yeah. But it's interesting that still, in a way, it's still Eli's fault because Eli became corrupted by the book and right. started competing with Joe to obtain control over
yeah.
her.
But it was also, it was like a really awesome scene. And I think it's my favorite, one of my favorite scenes of the season so far, and definitely my favorite Robbie Gabe scene, where Gabe basically says, you can't put all this stuff on me.
Oh, yeah. You can't. Yeah. He says that. That was that
so cutting and so true. Yeah. And it like it really speaks to like the beauty of their relationship, because Robbie harbors all this guilt, but like Gabe won't let him make that about him. He's like, if you're doing this killing, if you've got this vengeance, if you've got this need, it's not about me. You never checked with me, man.
Yeah, right. And like we saw it in the episode where Gabe basically told Daisy to get out. He's mm-hmm. like, look, I'm going to look after my older brother. If I don't, nobody else will, because he's too busy doing what he thinks he needs to do to take care of me
right.
without taking care of himself. And even though he recognizes those faults in his brother, in this episode, we still see him look at his brother with, like, the starry-eyed admiration of, like, you're a secret agent?
That was a great...
That's the coolest thing!
I knew it.
That was awesome because it spoke volumes about, like, what he'd been feeling all this time, because he knew something was up with Robbie.
Right.
And he's like suspecting mm-hmm. the worst. Like he's worried, because especially in East LA, he could have been like running with a gang or doing any number of things like at night. But to think, like, oh, you've been working for S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's like God. That makes possible. So much sense.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday to
Well, oh, one of them can't walk, so it works.
Perfect.
Much like our managers and directors just burst in, a S.H.I.E.L.D. also burst in.
Megan's just like, we got no time for this.
No,
right back into the show.
Everybody, please do wish Zach a very happy birthday.
If you're not following him on Twitter, why don't you go follow him at that Zach Wilson, huh? Zach
do
with a
that.
C-H.
And wish him
a happy birthday.
Thanks, guys.
Him.
That was ridiculous. For those listening,
Jesus! A wild Stephen Lemieux just ran in here with a knife.
We were just talking about a character
who
covered in blood,
yeah.
and like was a potential secret agent. And then
our producer
just
rushed in here with a knife and threw it at Zach on his birthday.
All right.
You never expected so much excitement on your special day, right?
I didn't think like I was gonna need a spirit of vengeance to like bring me back to life. Much the way that Robbie came back to life.
Exactly.
But yeah, I don't even remember what I was talking about. But it's like relief on Gabe's face.
Exactly.
Right.
Of course, as I mentioned, surprise inspections from the director. The director, and this is the most angry we've seen Jeffrey Mace in this series so far.
Dare I say, I don't like him when he's angry. All right, fine. I'll go hide under the table. Thank you very much.
No, that was fine, man. I stand with you on that one.
This was one of those moments where I like sat back from the TV and was just like, what is this time that we're living in as comic book fans? On national broadcast television, in live action, with amazing production value, the Patriot just fought Ghost Rider. What? What?
And got his butt kicked.
It's not like Spider-Man and like Captain America were like fighting bad guys. Ghost Rider, Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider. And the Patriot just had a battle on a S.H.I.E.L.D. jet.
Yep,
that is a thing.
That's the world.
How about that containment unit? Nobody has ever.
Yes,
my boy.
100%. 100%. And the thing that I love most about it is it's like a very elegant way to show that magic is far beyond any of their comprehension.
Yes.
And like every bit of preparation that they've ever had for anything, because S.H.I.E.L.D. has always been prepared for whatever.
Right.
Will not prepare them for what comes next.
It held
Lash.
Lash,
thank you. Yeah.
Freaking Lash.
Lash, who had crazy powers. I could just like tear through a wall like it was like
energy beam.
Like it was paper mache. He could just pop through a wall like he was like Kool-Aid Man.
And this... Oh, yeah.
But yeah, thank you. I was like, oh, please get that off. But yeah, the... Like, seeing this, you're absolutely right. It is the perfect way, because we S.H.I.E.L.D. up until this season has been 100% rooted in the science part of the science fiction. And it was a beautiful way of just having Fitz there and being like, that's not possible. That's not a thing that should have happened. In the same way that Eli, at the beginning of the episode, is like, this isn't adding up. Nothing about these equations and in the experiment that we're doing make any sense.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I will also point out, like, we do have, you know, a couple of episodes with like Thor kind of technology and that sort of stuff. But like, you know, the Thor films explained away their worlds and their magic as just another form of technology.
Right. It's so advanced that we humans can't comprehend
it.
We see it as magic, but they're like, oh, this is science and it's proof.
But, this is magic. Like, this is magic. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I've been thinking, with Doctor Strange coming out in 2 days, I've been thinking about it a lot because it still is going to follow a certain... It's science in the way that only Marvel can be science at a certain point.
Sure.
Because it's just a different set of rules.
Right. Like, but it still has rules, it still has structure, it still has logic.
They call it, like, instead of spells, it's quantum tech.
Right.
It's just what we call it.
Okay.
Right. It's a formula with chemicals, or, like, you can
argue
that...
Isn't that what Fitz calls it? He calls it, like, quantum power cells
or
something?
Yeah, he calls them quantum, like, yeah, quantum technology. They keep saying quantum blank.
Quantum is a word that doesn't mean anything anymore. All meaning has been stripped.
But quantum does generally refer to time. So, like, the fact they were stored in those cells and they woke up thinking they'd been in there for a few hours.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I just want to figure out exactly what this chamber does. It creates matter.
Yeah.
And it lets the... So, is it... Because it sounded... The way they described it almost sounded like... the reality stone,
pretty much
from the infinite, like that they could just conjure life.
Yeah, at the beginning of the episode, we see them. Yeah, we basically see them create carbon
in a magic bullet
out of nothing
in a freaking NutriBullet with LED lights on it.
How motionful that look like?
Right, I would watch it though. That sounds very compelling.
Oh gosh, but yeah, it looks like the goal that Joe was working towards was to become the conduit, so that you don't need a machine to do it; that he could just do it from his bare hands. And as Eli was accusing him of becoming a god.
Right.
And it seems like that's sort of where they're taking Eli's storyline, as he's become corrupted with power. And all this time that he's been in jail, he's been secretly planning a way out to get back to this lab. Lucy popping up just happened to work out pretty well for him.
Yeah.
So, again, it's interesting because when we were introduced to Eli... And we were sitting, we were like, because the first time he's mentioned is an offhanded comment from Daisy. And it's like,
gas station.
What does that mean? And comic book fans are like, dude. But everybody who's not familiar with it is like, oh, okay, he's got family.
He's Uncle Eli.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just Uncle Eli.
Good old Uncle Eli.
And given that they seemed to have a really good relationship prior to him getting jailed... It was very, it was like, how are they going to play Eli? And now that we've seen his true colors, I'm angry because I'm like, I should have just not trusted you from the start.
We were thinking like, oh, they drastically changed this character.
I wasn't buying it at all. No.
Evil from the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, Darkhold had a hold of him.
Sure.
You could blame it on that.
So, but like him coming out of the chamber, like now he has the power, this power
to create anything.
I got the power.
Nine kinds of matter. Just take this the ingredients, throw it into the chamber, hit the buttons on the internal screen, and you'll have any kind of matter you could want.
Delicious. So like he's creating matter at the end. He's essentially a god. He can do whatever he wants. We've never faced a threat like this
before. And he's corrupted by that book.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, which has given him untold knowledge and could continue to give him untold knowledge. Now, here's my question about the Darkhold. Does the Darkhold have its own agenda, or is it just feeding entirely off the desires of the people who read it? Because it seems to me that it takes the core desire of, like, say, Joe, who wanted to create a device that could create carbon and potentially create food and cure global starvation, and then shifted it into turning him into a conduit to be able to create anything and essentially create life and become a god.
Because think of all the good we can do.
Right. So I'm wondering, does the Darkhold, or whoever created the Darkhold, or whatever possesses the Darkhold, have its own agenda for Eli now that he has this power?
That's a good question.
Interesting question, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, it's hard. When I see the Darkhold, I think, oh, okay, it's basically the Necronomicon. But, like, it's hard to say whether or not, like, the book can steer somebody in a certain direction.
Well, we saw the scene where they both see different languages, and they're looking at it at the same time, and so one of them sees German, the other one sees English. And I personally feel, again, I'd be completely wrong, but I think this book reads... Yeah, wasn't there a line like, are we reading it or is it reading us?
Right.
I think it's definitely reading whoever's holding it and, like, kind of finding the word. You know, everybody, we got things we want to better about ourselves. I think the Darkhold grasps onto, like, the worst parts of us and, like,
I guess what I'm asking is it using the people who read it?
Right. To do its own
bidding.
Yeah. Like, yeah, does it feed off of them?
It could be. It definitely, it's always, in the comics, it always requires, like, some dark, like, magic.
Right.
Like sacrifice or anything to use it.
Yeah, you said like it required a soul to cast a spell.
I think it was soul or blood. Like it gets, because it creates like werewolves and vampires and stuff. So it gets real weird.
Tell me that Eli's going to make werewolves and vampires.
But like, I think they traded those to make ghosts.
Oh, man.
But the big.
Jesse's fond of calling them the Boo Crew.
One thing that, because as I was reading more about the Darkhold, like, the Darkhold Redeemers are the team that, like, sort of is supposed to be, like, cleaning up after its mess and, like, hiding it, and obviously they're not doing a great job right now. They're out there.
Get it together, guys.
Taking a break. They're on taking a nap or something.
But they're also responsible for bringing, when Danny Ketch died at one point, the Darkhold Redeemers bring him back to life. So I'm wondering if there's going to be something where this like group is going to have to come in, if we're going to find a team that's like responsible for this magic stuff. Mm. Maybe next time,
don't leave it in a basement somewhere.
Maybe there's a supreme person we could go to who might be able to help with these things.
Some kind of sorcerer?
Cape wearing. Maybe a doctor or something.
That'd never work.
He can't be normal.
A group of mystics.
He's a little off,
you know?
A doctor who's quirky?
Doctor Who's quirky?
No.
Maybe we'll take a trip. I mean, the Zephyr could get to Greenwich Village pretty quick. I'm just saying. Random destination.
Sure. Or
so
Hong
strange.
Kong or London.
Or London.
Do we want to talk about that preview at all? Or should we?
No, we don't have time.
No, we don't have time.
We still got to find out where Simmons is.
Big Easter egg. Easter egg, by which I mean they directly made sure that you understood the reference. That I just appreciate it because we had been teased about an Agent Carter reveal in this episode.
Yes, the throwback to Aes Sedain Industries.
Yeah, this building that they're in, this lab, is like it's owned by Roxxon, and this is all related to the research that was started in season 2 of Agent Carter when Peggy's boyfriend, I don't remember his name.
He's working with the dark matter.
Yeah, he's like, they're working with zero matter or the dark force. Who names these things?
Focus I like groups that comment evil.
Yeah, that was great. I love Max so much.
Max always has the best observations about all of the science fiction-y, alien, magical things that are just happening around him.
He's like one of the show's best creations over the course of the last 2 years. Like, to the point that he now has a signature prop. They made him a shotgun axe that's permanent.
I got to hold it. It's awesome. They have a bloody one and one without blood on it.
That's awesome. We were saying last week, Mac is the greatest, the perfect he can team up with anybody on the show and right. it will be brilliant. Like when he teams up with Robbie, it's just like they have this perfect chemistry. Yeah. When he teams up with Fitz, you get Fitz Mac and it's amazing. When he teams up with Coulson, you get Mac and Cheese. which Cheese is one of Coulson's like call signs in the comics. So we decided that they're Mac and Cheese.
Nice.
Fabulous.
Also Gabe and Robbie's favorite dinner. Yeah. Gabe's yep. favorite is mac
he
and cheese.
Love he loves mac and cheese. Cheese.
You know what? Like, I need to watch. I think it was the first episode where they introduce, not the first one they introduce Gabe, but when Gabe meets Daisy and they're having dinner. I need to see what they're eating.
To see if they're eating mac and cheese.
If they're eating mac and cheese, again, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. writers and like producers, like, you guys are awesome. Like, they're, I mean, they Canelo's auto well, and body, Gabe's, same.
Gabe's a much like more adult version of himself.
He is, but you yeah. know, you never stop yeah. liking the food you like.
No,
you
I
like
had mac and cheese last night.
Oh, no.
Like
mac and cheese. Cheese is delicious. That will never not be good.
But yeah, where did Simmons get sent?
Thank you.
Yes, at the beginning of the episode, the director, none too happy with events like, I don't know, getting blackmailed, you know, at the end of the last episode with a murderer and a renegade agent that S.H.I.E.L.D. is allegedly working with and having footage of that, like, presented to him and getting blackmailed about it. Yeah, he's not happy. So Simmons was sent off, and we spent the entire episode with Fitz going, has anybody heard from her? Anybody? She hasn't called me. Does anybody know where
she's at?
She
got blackbagged.
Yeah, yes. They put a hood over. Like,
yeah, here you go.
He's talking about, like, trust. And I'm like, trust her. Trust her.
But, I mean, does anybody else think she has been straight up kidnapped by the mad dogs, war dogs, bad dogs, wild dogs, wild hogs?
Keep going.
Gold dogs. Watchdogs.
Watchdogs, thank you.
She is, mad dogs.
So you think that because he was talking to the senator last week,
her trade was, give me the person who understands the most about inhuman physiology, and we are going to lock her up and use her to create some kind of bioweapon that will kill all inhumans.
I don't think so. Because
you think it's going to be something smarter than that?
No. It's just the director's an inhuman. Right. And even though, like, yeah, well, S.H.I.E.L.D. has put him in a bind right yeah. now, he would not, like, he still values the lives of inhumans, and peaceful coexistence is still the S.H.I.E.L.D. directive at right. this particular moment.
I still think he is ultimately a good guy. He may have, like, some bad means, and he's, like, I don't know what he's up to. We still know that he's covering up something about what he did in Vienna. It was just a complete fake, mm-hmm. which would make sense, because the U.S. government yeah. trying to put up basically a new Captain America, which is what the Jeffrey Mace character has always been.
I don't know, guys. I don't trust anybody who doesn't like Han Solo.
Mm. Yeah. He's so lame.
But I
bet his favorite is Mon Mothma.
I love that. It's so perfect that Coulson loves Ackbar.
Yes!
The unsung hero. It's a trap.
It's true.
But yeah, I mean, we gotta start wrapping out.
Yeah, I know. But, yeah.
Should we just like rapid fire some predictions?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do some rapid fire
After Buzz TV predictions.
Apologies to all of our reviewers on iTunes. We'll get to you guys next week. And a special apologies to Phil Coulson's left hand. We know you sent in your review, and I have it. Don't have time.
Tonight. We had a lot of good stuff to talk about. So, okay, rapid fire predictions. I don't think she's been kidnapped. I think she's been sent on a special assignment that required a hazmat suit. So he's still sending her into very invaluable like locations and missions. What that would be, I assume maybe the watchdogs did something, or they have a hideout somewhere, or they had stored a biological weapon somewhere, and she's going to disarm it.
Okay.
That's what I think.
Okay. As for me, I think 100%, because she didn't get put in a hazmat suit, she got black bagged. They do not want her to know where she's going.
Yeah. That's how I
So think. People are going to meet her on the other end, including the woman who works for the government but is a member of the watchdogs. They're going to claim that it is the U.S. government. They're going to ask her for information. They're going to use and abuse that information in ways that they wouldn't tell Jeffrey Mace. He was in a bind. Like, there's no way that she had to give him all the information about what they were going to do with the information. He just agreed to give them her. As for Eli, no idea what he's up to. I do think that the Darkhold has more of an agenda
and more like has kind of a hold on him that maybe he doesn't even realize. But yeah, that's all my predictions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're gonna put the Darkhold away, but when Eli comes out, he's gonna be an unstoppable force now. I don't think he's going to be exactly using his powers for good, even as he may have been intentioned. I think he's going to just be going for the book. And with these abilities, he's probably going to be able to track it down pretty well.
Does anybody else think that when Fitz finds out about the book, he's going to try to use it to stop Eli? Or someone's going to use the book to try to stop Eli, but ultimately it's going to lead them down a dark path?
I like that.
It's going to happen in about three episodes.
I don't know about that, but I have another one. I have another one real quick. Mm-hmm. With S.H.I.E.L.D. having custody of the Darkhold, say somebody like Fitz or Radcliffe gets a hold of it and decides, hey, let's bond a soul to this lady robot
to
that
Ada?
I have.
Oh, oh shit.
Mind blown over there.
Sophia, we know you can't say everything because you have seen some of what's coming, but any predictions you want to throw out?
I've got a prediction that's like right on point. It's going to be awesome. That's my prediction.
Nice. Love it. Nice.
Well, again, do we have any final thoughts since we got to wrap up?
Last thing, just Felipe, thank you so much
for having
us.
Yeah,
no, having the new book comes out this month, right? Does the new issue of Ghost Rider drop?
I am not sure about the specific date. I want to say November 30th. That would be great for me schedule-wise, but it might come out
that
sooner
is a
than
Wednesday.
That,
if so, anybody okay. wants to know
and that
what
would
to
be
get me for Christmas.
Smart timing, because S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to be off, guys, for a few weeks.
Until November 29th.
It's okay.
It's all right.
But yeah, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s going to be off for a few weeks. It comes back on the 29th, so it would make sense to drop Ghost Rider book.
Ghost Rider number one.
Right after.
That actually does sound like pretty good timing. And again, we've got the election and Thanksgiving, so it makes sense that we're taking a few weeks.
Fine.
It's upsetting.
It's fine.
But yeah, it's fine. Everything's fine. But again, Felipe, I cannot say thank you enough.
Thank you. Appreciate
for coming in. Do you have any other upcoming projects that you can talk about that you'd like people to know about?
Yeah, actually, well, Ghost Rider number one, November 30th, tentatively, or at least I think, drawn by Danilo Bayruth, written by me. We have a backup story by written by me and drawn by Tried Moore, the original artist of the first story arc of all new Ghost Rider. Of course, we've got the first two story arcs of the character. If you're interested in Robbie and Gabe and Eli and the Ghost Rider, this version of Ghost Rider, and want to find out more and see what it's like in the comics, you've got Ghost Rider Volume 1, Engines of Vengeance, and Ghost Rider Volume 2, Legend. You can pick those up. And then, yeah, November, if you can join us for the ride with the new series, that'd be great.
Now, really important question. Does Robbie's hair look like it does in the first issue? In this new
she
version?
Misses the blonde.
Oh, well, I Robbie's really love Robbie's hair.
Yeah. Well, Robbie switches it up. He's had different hairstyles throughout the two story arcs.
At the end of volume two, he had like a new one, like just black on top.
Yeah. And he's got the marks of the skull of Eli on his forehead and the sides. Well, you'll have to stay tuned and see.
All right. Oh, well, again, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Matt, thank you as well.
Thank you for having me. It's really been a blast being back. I miss you guys, and it's just been really nice getting back to the old AfterBuzz team.
Oh,
yeah.
It's been great. So, yeah, let's go around the table. Felipe, where can people go if they want to find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Felipe Tweeters, FelipeTweers, or Felipe Smith Art on Instagram and Tumblr.
Cool. Zach?
You guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson, ThatZachWilson. And also check me out on the Popcorn Talk, our sister network, where I do Marvel movie news on Tuesdays at the Voice of Doom. And then Sci-Fi Weekly, which has moved to Sunday afternoons at 3 p.m. We're having our election special this Sunday, and we're asking the question, are we living in Idiocracy?
Oh.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. Matt?
You can find me over at SourceFed doing the news on Saturdays. SourceFed Nerd, we're doing a show called Superhero Smackdown. It's a spiritual successor to our show Superhero Roundup. We take the four DC shows, if you watch any of those, and we fight it out to see which one won the week. every single week.
You had to take Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. out of the running
because it would have won every week. And it just would have been a foregone conclusion. But that's every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time live. And then it lives on SourceFed Nerd. And then also sketches on Nuclear Family. We just did a sketch in 360 VR with brand new spatial audio technology based around The Purge. We're really proud of it. Oh. So if you want to go check that out, youtube.com/Nuclear Family.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. I'm also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. And I write articles for The Movie Chick. That's Chick with 2 K's. Be sure to check those out. Also, earlier today, I was on TV Fights. So be sure to go to Screen Junkies Plus to check out that episode. It was a ton of fun. Again, thank you, Felipe. Thank you to everybody in the hashtag, in the live chat. You guys are fantastic. Thank you all so much for watching. We will see you all next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.